Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thank you for joining me here on the RTC Weekly Download, where we feature some old-time radio that I think you'll enjoy. So we have an hour of it coming up. I hope you get comfortable, get a nice drink, sit down, and listen. Turn the sound up, of course. Perfect. Now we're going to have an episode of Inheritance. This one's about the writer Horatio Alger, and it dates from 1954, and I understand that there's an actor in there called Jim Dolan. It's not me. I'm not that old. And we're going to, following up that program, we're going to have an episode of Exploring Tomorrow. That's science fiction. It's called The Stowaway. That's from 1958. And I am that old, but I'm not acting in that particular show. Here we go with Inheritance.
This is the story of a man who might be called the spokesman for the American dream. He was an author, and he wrote books, and his name was Horatio Alger.
This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Stories out of that great fabric of visions, struggles, and accomplishments of the American past. Stories of our inheritance.
Who was Horatio Alger? Did he really live? Was he a legend, as some people think? He built dreams, but this builder of dreams was not a legend. He was a man. And he lived and loved and died. There are tears to his story and some laughter. Come back with us now to the middle of the last century, to Harvard College in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Come in.
Horatio, want to meet a pretty girl?
A what? Where, Alex?
Oh, not so fast. This isn't just any girl. It's my cousin Horatio. She's come for a visit.
Patience?
None other. Patience Stires. That fair young cousin of that brilliant young scholar, that pride of Harvard, that charming young man who stands before you. Alex Chapman. I bow, sir.
You're crazy, Alex. Where is she?
Downstairs. You want to meet her?
If she's like her picture.
Her picture is but a faint copy of herself. She is, to use an image...
Come on, Alex. Introduce me. Hello, Miss Stires.
Hello, Mr. Alger.
Oh, sparkling conversation. It's a pity Emerson and Thoreau can't be here to enjoy it.
You are fairer than your picture, Miss Stires.
Thank you, Mr. Alger.
Better, much better. Let me be sure you have another Sally in you, and I'll leave you alone.
Would it please you to walk around the grounds a bit, Miss Stires?
Thank you. I should love to, Mr. Alger.
What have they done? Here I play Cupid, and they leave me and walk away. If I were Cupid, I'd send an arrow after them. No, on second thought, I see I don't have to.
A boy named Horatio, a girl named Patience, and an autumn under the elms of Cambridge, Massachusetts. That night, Horatio Alger wrote to his father.
Dear Father, I think that today I met the girl I shall marry. Her name is Patience Stires. Her eyes are hazel and sad, and she wears a yellow bonnet.
Ruin your career. Why, she's a baby. She's not even old enough to walk outside by herself.
Father...
You have promised, Horatio. You can go somewhere. But this is puppy love. Don't waste your time, boy. Don't waste yourself. It's time to marry when you're older.
Take my hand.
When are you coming back, Patience?
When? I don't know, Horatio. I only know this autumn sings in me. And there may never be another like it.
Patience, let's marry in spite of my father.
No, Horatio. Not now. Later, perhaps, if there is a later. You have much to do, my dear. You are going to become a great writer. You'll need your father now. I can't walk into a family that doesn't want me.
He's a fool.
Oh, hush, Horatio, hush.
I'll make you a promise, Patience. I'll write you a book. Because of you and for you.
I should like that.
It will be a fine book, and you will be proud of it.
I shall look for your book, Horatio.
And then I'll come for you, Patience, and marry you.
I must go now. Goodbye. Goodbye, Horatio. Think of me. I shall think of you.
October turned to winter and winter to spring. And in the spring, Horatio Alger graduated from Harvard. He was going to write. He would write literature. He would write a fine book for Patience. He gave some sermons in his father's church. He was liked and even thought of becoming a minister. And yet, he could not forget the girl with the sad hazel eyes. And he could not forget her voice.
Write me your book, Horatio. I shall look for it.
And so, Horatio Alger set himself to his task. In a letter, he confided to his friend, Alex.
Tell your dear cousin I have started her book. When it is published and I am famous, I shall come for her. I truly believe, Alex, that it will be literature. Somehow I feel it. And Alex, ask her, please, to answer my letters.
You waste your time trying to write a book.
It is not a waste of time, Father. You'll be proud of me.
I should be prouder of you if you would serve God. What about that girl you were running with when you were at Harvard? Do you see her?
No.
'Tis good. I wrote her a note. I told her she had no right to spoil a man's career.
You what?
You need not question the note. It was in good taste. It simply stated the facts.
So that's why she had not answered his letters. All right, he would show them. He would write his book. He would publish, and then he would marry Patience. But the words didn't come, and desperately Horatio Alger began to seek. He had to write something. He had to publish. He could no longer waste time. And so, because he could not write the book, he wrote another book. He described it in a letter to a Boston publisher.
It's a book for boys. I'm calling it Ragged Dick. It's the story of a poor boy who dreams of success and by hard work and perseverance finds it, marries, and lives happily ever after.
Ragged Dick, Horatio Alger's own dream, projected onto a young hero who works hard, marries and lives happily ever after. He finishes the manuscript and takes it into Boston to Mr. A.K. Loring, a prominent Boston publisher.
Mr. Alger, it's good. It's mighty good.
Thank you, sir.
Strikes the right chord. Boys will love it. Shows them they have something to strive for. Yes, I'm going to publish it. And Alger, I want you to start on a sequel.
Well, sir, I had just thought to try my hand at this. There is another book I want to write.
Oh, you'll get to it, Mr. Alger. You'll get to it. Now, about a title for the sequel.
A sequel to Ragged Dick. There were to be 100 sequels, but that was in the future. Today was more important. 2 books. He would go to New York. He would become a real writer. He rented a small room on 26th Street and settled down to finishing Fame and Fortune. He intended to follow it with a serious writing, but he was not to have his peace, for Ragged Dick was on the bookstands,
and its success was tremendous.
I gave it to my kid for Christmas. Shows how a boy can start anywhere and get ahead. That Alger really knows his stuff.
Fame and fortune appeared. The ovation was even greater. Printings began to mount into staggering figures. The newsboys at the corner had a word to say about it.
Oh, sure, I read it. It's about a fella just like me. He sold papers, and look what happened to him. Sort of makes you feel like you're really doing something on the street corner.
Advances, commitments, more books. Always the same story with variations. The success astonished him, and he belittled it. He wrote to his friend, Robert Ammer.
It will not be long before I get started on a novel that I hope will find a place in the company of fine writing.
Alger was not giving up on his dream, but unwittingly he was filling the dreams of others. For he was providing an answer to the vacuum of faith left by the Civil War, helping to formulate the ambitions of thousands of displaced and rootless youngsters who, so far as they knew, had nothing to look forward to. Alger held up the mirror of destiny to the poorest boy and convinced him that the prosperous image he saw was his very own. Yes, there was laughter in the life of Horatio Alger, and there were tears. But now there was fame.
Paper! Get your paper!
Oh, hello, Mr. Alger.
Hello.
My name is Wing. I recognized you.
Glad to meet you, Wing.
Oh, your stories are great, Mr. Alger. I read them all. Try and Trust, From Farm Boy to Senator, Andy Grant's Pluck, Slow and Sure, Dan the Newsboy's Thriving for Fortune.
Wait a minute.
All the fellas like them.
All the fellas? Where?
At the Newsboy's home where I live.
The Newsboy's home?
Yeah. A lot of us live there. We can get a bed for 3 cents a night. Now, we all work hard. And someday, we're going to be successful. Just like in your books.
Wing, take me to the Newsboy's home. I'd like to look around.
The Newsboy's lodging home, where a newsboy for a few pennies could get a lodging for the night. He entered. He looked around. Under one roof, he saw the people he had been writing about.
Hello, Mr. Alger. My name's Charlie O'Connor. I'm the superintendent of the home.
Hello, Mr. O'Connor.
Well, we've got all your books here, Mr. Alger. They're great.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor.
I suppose it's material you're wanting. Well, now, we've got plenty of it here. And if it's what they're thinking about that you'd like to know, just ask them. They're good boys, and they're honest boys, and they work hard. They'll tell you their dreams once you get to know them.
Horatio Alger began making real friends of them. Not for material. He now had more than he could use. Alger spent so much time at the Newsboys' home that one day Charlie O'Connor got an idea.
Mr. Alger.
Yes, Charlie.
I've been thinking about you.
Yes?
Are you married?
No. No, I'm not married.
Well, why don't you come and live here, Mr. Alger? The boys like you. You could work here, sleep here. Sort of make it your headquarters.
Live here? Charlie, that's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. I think I'll do just that.
The best-selling author in America, living at the Newsboys' home. Well, why not? These were the people he was writing about, weren't they? He moved in and became a pillar of the home. There are tears to his story, and there is laughter. There is warmth, but there is also loneliness.
Well, good night, Mr. Alger.
Good night, Charlie.
All the boys in?
Yes.
You just going to sit there?
For a while.
Well, good night.
Night, Charlie.
The day is done. The writing is over. The appointments have been kept. And the waves of bootblacking boys and newsboys have returned from the streets and are asleep. It is at times like this
that loneliness keeps an appointment with memory.
I shall look for your book, Horatio.
Patience.
He had forgotten. No, not forgotten, postponed. Too late. No, it was never too late. Hadn't he written that in all his books? But the book, where was it? Tomorrow. Tomorrow he would write it.
Letter for you, Horatio.
Thanks, Charlie.
My dear son, I have just come from a visit to a Miss Stiers, for whom, if recollection serves, you evinced an attachment when you were a boy. She has been living in Concord and has come here in the hope of seeing you again. The woman is seriously ill, and I would be derelict in my duty if I failed to comply with her request and inform you of her desire.
In the name of the Lord, what's the matter?
I've got to leave, Charlie. Help me get my bag, quick.
What is it?
I have a friend, and she needs me.
Patience dying, somehow managing to get to South Natick to see him. Patience caring that much. What a fool he'd been. He must get there in time. He must. Where did the time go? It was only a little while before at Harvard. He wasn't much older. Yes, he was much older. He had written 70 books, but he had skipped one. Where was it? Patience.
South Natick, South Natick.
You have come too late, Horatio. It was this morning.
Dear Lord, where is she? I must see her.
In the upstairs room.
Horatio Alger returned to New York. He rode in a carriage over the cobblestones, and a newsboy shouted his greeting from the corner.
Hello, Mr. Alger!
And the carriage took him to Fulton Street, and he got out, went past the offices of the New York Sun, and slowly entered the newsboy's lodging home.
Sit down, Horatio.
No, Charlie, there's no more time. I'm leaving.
Leaving? Where?
Perhaps my old lodging. I have a book to write.
Why not write it here?
No, Charlie. It's a different kind of book. One I promised to an old friend a long time ago.
Horatio Alger went back to his small room on 26th Street. On the mantel, he put his miniature bust of William Shakespeare. He got out his silk dressing gown and his slippers. He put his paper and pen on the desk. The book. What would he call it? What could he call it? What had he been talking about all his life? What was the story of his life? Tomorrow. That's what it was about, tomorrow, and that's what he would call his book. And he sat down and tried to write. Tomorrow. But there were no words, for there was no tomorrow. There was only today. A day passed, a week, 2 weeks. Where were the words? Where was tomorrow? He would find it, he would find it. But there were ghosts in the room, and they would not leave it still enough for him to think.
Horatio, want to meet a pretty girl?
Pretty girl? Yes. Yes, Alex. Where?
Hello, Mr. Alger.
Patience?
I am 17, and my eyes are hazel and sad, and I wear a yellow bonnet.
Alex? Alex.
Ruin your career? She's a baby. She's not even old enough to walk outside by herself. Listen to me, boy. Listen to me.
Take my hand.
I'll write a book, and you will be in it.
I shall look for your book, Horatio. When, my dear?
Tomorrow.
When?
Tomorrow.
When, Horatio?
Tomorrow. Tomorrow. Patience, wait for me. Wait for me.
There he is. He's been having a terrible time, poor old fellow.
All right, come on, sir. Easy. The ambulance is downstairs. Easy does it. Bring the stretcher over here. Yeah, that's it. Easy now.
They took him to the hospital. They didn't know who he was. A man suddenly grown old in a rooming house. They were going to put him in the mercy ward. The story has it that a well-dressed man in a dark suit followed the ambulance to the hospital. He was tall and had dark hair and looked successful. He spoke to the nurse at the desk.
Give him a private room. I'll pay the bill.
Are you a relative?
No, not really. I used to be a newsboy. He used to ride past my post every day. We used to greet one another.
He was released from the hospital quite some time later. No home, no family. Where to go? South Natick? No. Cambridge? Yes. Yes, Cambridge. There are elms in Cambridge. There was an October in Cambridge a long time ago. Of course, Cambridge. He has a sister there. She was a widow and she would take care of him. He needed care.
Horatio, do you wish to walk today?
Not today. I need more strength. And when I am strong again, I have much writing to do.
But you've written enough, Horatio. 100 books.
No. Just one book. Just one book.
Of course. Here, let me tuck that blanket in.
The pillows were soft against his head, and the warmth of the blanket soothed a tired body. A little more strength, a little more time. If only patience were here.
Horatio, there's a Mr. Haig here to see you.
Haig?
Yes. Says he's from the Newsboys' Home in New York.
Ask him in, please.
Hello, Mr. Alger.
Hello, Mr. Haig.
The Newsboys heard of your illness. Word has a way of reaching them, and so over 200 of them drew up this petition of thanks to you. Here are their signatures. They asked me to come and bring it to you.
The Newsboys. They remembered.
Very much, Mr. Alger. You know, you have more sons than any man in the world.
Thank you, Mr. Haig. Thank you very much.
The Newsboys remembered. How nice of them. Then it wasn't all wasted. He had meant something to them. He could almost see them now, as if they were in the room. How strange.
Hello, Mr. Alger.
Hello, Tim.
Hi there, Mr. Alger.
Wing, hello.
The little room was becoming crowded. Why, look, there was Charlie O'Connor.
Hello, Horatio.
Hello, Charlie.
They were all there. Why? Had they come to say goodbye? Look, so many of them.
Hello, Mr. Alger.
Feel better, Mr. Alger.
Some of them are older. They don't look the same. Some of them are wearing fine suits, and their hair is combed, and their faces are clean.
You'll be all right. Good care of yourself, Mr. Alger.
Why, they've been successful. Of course. Wasn't that what he had been writing about? Of course. Why, they're all here. Perhaps he should make a speech. Perhaps he should.
I'm glad to see you all. Some of you look very prosperous and happy indeed. That's the way I told you it would be, isn't it? That in this land a boy can start anywhere. and succeed. If only he tries hard enough. Thank you. Thank you for coming to see me. I'm very tired now. You must excuse me. Please.
The faces recede and silently the forms vanish, all but one. And it is growing very dark, perhaps even a little chilly. And on the bed, a man now looking very old smiles a bit, for the last form is before him.
Horatio, take my hand.
He reaches outward. For a moment, his eyes are very bright, and then everything grows very still. It is Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the year 1899, and Horatio Alger is dead. He was buried at the little church in South Natick, Massachusetts. Many came for his funeral. There were little clusters of them. Bootblacks who knew him when they were boys. Newsboys and older men. Men even beginning to gray, who sat silently at the service, remembering their boyhood and Alger's part in it. Strive and succeed. Fame and fortune, from rags to riches. Was it fiction or fact? It happened to people you know, and Horatio Alger was the chronicler of it. There is fame and there is loneliness in his story, but there is success too. For Horatio Alger really wrote his book. His name is a testament to the American dream and the American way of life. Go up to Cambridge and see his picture. It lies in the local historical museum. And then, go for a walk underneath the elm.
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from a National Vice Commander of the Legion, Father Albert J. Hoffman. Father Hoffman.
On November 11th, Veterans Day will be celebrated in the United States for the first time in American history. Formerly known as Armistice Day, in observation of the armistice declared in 1918 between the Allies and the Central Powers in the First World War, this day, from now on, will commemorate the contribution which all veterans have made for their country. The American Legion, which numbers in its membership veterans from two world wars and veterans of service during the Korean hostilities, has been invited by the Attorney General Brownell to cooperate with the United States Department of Immigration and Naturalization in observation of our first Veterans Day, by arranging for the naturalization of 50,000 new citizens on that day. It seems fitting that veterans who have in battle secured the precious freedoms which are our American inheritance should assist those who are about to become new American citizens. From the time of our founding fathers, America has stood as a land of opportunity and freedom. A poem graven on a tablet within the main entrance of the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty contains these words of invitation and promise. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Those who yearn to breathe free do still find these shores. The desire for economic opportunity, for political and religious freedom, is as real in the hearts of the communist-dominated peoples today as it was for the early American colonists of Jamestown and Salem who first settled in this land. A precious inheritance bequeathed by our forefathers and secured in this century by the blood of patriots awaits the 50,000 individuals who will, on November 11th, declare, I am an American.
Thank you, Father Hoffman. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's story about Horatio Alger was written by Robert S. Green. Tom Shirley was your narrator. Horatio Alger was played by Mandel Kramer. Others in the cast were John Gibson, Treva Frazee, Bob Hastings, Jim Dolan, Beatrice Pons, and Bill Gray. Inheritance was produced by Wade Arnold and directed by Harry Frazee. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.
Enjoy fine variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show on NBC.
Now, step into the incredible, amazing future as we go exploring tomorrow. And now, here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
The essential character of any frontier you explore is that if you get into it and stick your neck out, you get it lopped off and there's no help. The frontier is the place where there isn't any reserve, where there isn't anyone to help you if you get into trouble. There is no support. Tonight's story is a story of a true frontier. You know, sometimes the frontier lies just the other side of a doorway. It doesn't seem very different, but it can be the difference between life and sudden death. We are in a somewhat different position. We can summon support here. I can push my little push button here and summon our supporters. You know, when we think of that glamorous future, we sometimes tend to forget that things cost money now and things will cost in the future. Let's suppose that there are ships and they are going out between the worlds. They carry emergency supplies for expeditions that may be in trouble on some of the planets that are being explored. But they can't carry an extra lot of them. It costs too much. They carry parachutes, in effect, to drop them as they flash by the world that's in trouble. Little parachutes for space, a plastic bubble with a tiny motor, just enough to lower it down to the planet without destruction. They'd probably use human pilots to do it, too. Because, you know, a human brain is the lightest of all computing devices. It's lighter than an electronic computer. It would be cheaper and wiser to use human pilots to drop these little plastic bubble parachutes of space to a planet in trouble. Let's consider one where there's an expedition that's gotten into medical trouble. The men are sick and they need a serum that they don't have. They've called for help from one of the passing interstellar liners. The liner has stopped for a moment, dropped one of its little space parachutes, and gone on its way, flashing on to some other star somewhere else. And in that emergency dispatch ship, that little space parachute, the pilot discovers...
I'm not somebody who shouldn't be there is in that supplies closet. The gauge is never wrong. It says there's a living human body inside that closet radiating heat.
Come on out, chum. Open that door, I'll open it. Come on out. Oh, no.
All right. I give up. Now what?
Sit down.
All right. Well... You still haven't told me. I mean, what happens now? Do I pay a fine or something?
What are you doing here?
Well, I just wanted to see my brother, that's all.
Your brother?
Mm-hmm. He's on Woden. He's with Group 2.
Oh.
I haven't seen him for 10 years, ever since he went there.
What's his name?
Cross. Jerry Cross. Do you know him?
Only his name. I've never met him.
Oh, I was only 8 years old when he left.
What was your original destination aboard the Stardust?
Mimir. I had a job to go to.
You knew you were breaking a rule when you stowed away on this ship?
Oh, I knew I was breaking some kind of regulation.
Is that all it means to you?
Well, I mean...
There was a sign posted there. Didn't you see it?
A sign?
Yeah.
Oh! you mean the one that said unauthorized personnel keep out?
That's the one.
Oh, well, I guess I saw it.
And ignored it.
Oh, come on. Now, look, don't be so grim.
How did you manage to stow away?
Oh, it was easy. I just saw my chance and acted on impulse. I saw there was plenty of room in that closet, and so here I am.
Yeah, here you are.
Oh, please, don't worry. I'll be a model criminal or prisoner or whatever it is I am now. And I'll pay for my keep, too. And when we get to Woden, well, I'll make myself useful.
Quiet.
Sorry.
You have an identification disc?
Yes.
Give it to me.
Well, my name is Marilyn. Marilyn.
Let me have the disc.
Okay. Will I get it back?
No.
Oh, but
I'm sorry, I need the information on it. I have to put it all in my report.
But when you've got all the information, surely I'll get it back. I need it.
Do you know why I'm flying this ship to Woden?
No.
No idea?
Well, I know the Stardust got a message. I suppose you're taking extra equipment.
I'm taking serum.
Oh.
If I don't get that serum to Woden, 6 men are going to die.
My brother, too?
Not if he's with Group 2. He's 28,000 miles away from all this. On the opposite side of the planet.
Opposite side? Well, then how will I get to see him?
You're not going there. I'm sorry.
Look, I don't understand. You are going to Woden.
Yes.
Well, then if...
But you're not. You're going to leave this ship.
You mean I won't get to see Jerry?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, please.
I told you I'm sorry.
Well, when are you going to radio some other ship to have me take him back?
There are no other ships to radio.
Well, then...
Don't you understand?
No.
You can't stay aboard this ship.
What am I supposed to do? Jump overboard out into space?
You won't have to jump.
What?
You'll be jettisoned. You won't feel a thing.
Sometimes the universe seems cruel. I think that's a mistake. It isn't cruel, but it is ruthless. You must learn the lessons. And once you've learned them, you're all right. Unless you forget them. I'm afraid that girl forgot that there were frontiers. That there were places where there was no help.
You are joking.
These are not things you joke about.
No, you can't mean all this.
There is nothing anyone can do for you.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I just can't believe you're really serious. But you are. You do mean it. You're going to make me die.
It's the way it has to be.
No.
No human being in the universe can help
please,
you.
Oh, please.
Nobody wants it this way. Nobody would ever let it be this way if it were humanly possible to change it.
I can't believe it.
I told you, this ship is carrying fever serum to 6 men on Woden. All 6 will die unless I get there.
I know you told me.
A small ship like this one is provided with barely enough fuel to get to its destination. If you stay aboard, your added weight, once we hit gravity, will cause it to use up all its fuel before we land. That means, in simple terms, you and I will die and 6 other men will die waiting for the serum.
Is that it?
That's it.
Just that? We don't have enough fuel?
Yeah.
So I must die alone or take 7 other men with me?
That's how it stacks up.
And nobody really wants me to die.
Nobody does.
Well, then maybe... I mean, are you sure nothing...
Nothing can be done for you.
I just can't believe this is real. Less than an hour ago, I was a passenger on the Stardust. Now I'm on this ship. And I'm going to die. And nobody cares.
That's not true. We all care. It's different out here. It's not like being back on Earth.
I'll never see Mom and Daddy again. I'll never see Jerry. I'll never see anything again.
Hasn't your brother ever written to you?
Yes.
What did he talk about?
Things. I mean, well, all the things he was doing and how much he wanted to see us all again.
Didn't he ever tell you about frontier law?
What?
Look, out here, we live by a different set of values.
I don't know anything about frontier law.
You ignored a warning. Out here, you can only make that mistake just once. Oh, a lot of mistakes have been made, and a lot of men have died making them.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know about frontiers. I don't know about fuel or what was going to happen to me. I don't want to die. Why should I have to die? Just because I wanted to see my brother.
What's the use of trying to make her understand? What do I do? Quote the regulation to her, paragraph L, section 8, interstellar regulations, quote, any stowaway discovered aboard an emergency dispatch ship will be immediately upon discovery jettisoned into space, period, end quote. And what good would it do to her anyway? Okay, so H amount of fuel will not power an EDS with a mass of M plus X safely to its destination. How could she understand that? Look at her. 18 years old, brown curly hair, blue eyes, weight 110 pounds. And to me, she's just the unwanted factor in a very cold equation.
Crying won't help, will it? I mean, you're going to radio my brother.
If you want me to.
What will you tell him?
Nothing. I'll let you tell him.
Oh. I'm almost afraid to hear his voice. You make him sound so near to me. And all the time he'll be so far away. Just a voice. That's all he'll be, just a voice.
I'll call him anyway. All right.
Yes.
Barton, EDS-34G-11, emergency. Come in, Woden. Group 2, identify yourselves, please. This is a call for Jerry Cross. Please come in.
Jerry? Jerry, where are you? Jerry, why don't you answer? Jerry, they're going to let me die.
Keep quiet. They're coming on now.
Whatever happens, a man will always try to find some way out, even when he knows it's impossible. He'll still make a try. But sometimes, particularly on the frontiers, you're up against the problem that there isn't any way out. You're up against it.
Wait, I didn't hear.
He said goodbye, little sister.
Oh, I had so much more to talk about.
He knew that.
Was it really him?
It was your brother.
His voice sounded changed.
10 years ago, he was a little more than a boy. Now he's a man. Voice has changed.
Did I sound frightened when I talked to him?
No, you sounded fine.
Oh. How long do I have?
Oh, a little while.
What'll happen to me? Afterwards, I mean?
Nothing, I guess.
I'll just go on floating in space, is that it?
Something like that.
May I see?
See what?
Out there. Can I see it on the view screen?
Yeah, sure. There.
Well, there's nothing there. Just nothing at all. Well, there's some stars over there. I didn't see them. I was thinking of Mom and Daddy. They don't even know yet I'll never be going back to them, like I promised I would. It's funny, the things you remember. Like the time when I was only 6 years old, and my kitten got run over in the street. And the way Jerry held me in his arms and told me not to cry. And when I woke up in the morning, there she was on my bed with a brand new white fur coat. Just like Jerry had promised. It was a long time after that when Mama told me Jerry had gone to the pet shop at 4 a.m. He got the man out of bed and told him if he didn't produce a white kitten, somebody's neck was going to be broken. So the man found a white kitten for me.
You'll be gone soon. The little hand on that gauge will go back to zero and the equation will be balanced again.
Is it time yet?
What?
Is it time yet?
Time?
For me.
Almost.
How will it happen?
You'll go into that compartment. It's an airlock. And that's about all.
Oh, no, it can't be all. You'll do something.
I'll simply push a button.
And I'll be shot out into space.
I told you, you won't feel anything.
Yes, yes, you told me that. I'm very grateful.
You're all right?
I keep thinking everybody has to die sooner or later. It's no worse for me than anyone else, is it? Except most people don't know when it's going to happen, and I do.
You understand I have no power to help you. No power anywhere could help you out here.
All right.
If there was just one... But there isn't.
I know. Jerry understood that.
Yeah. Your brother's quite a guy.
He said everything will be all right. It will, won't it?
Everything, yes.
All right, I'm ready. Tell me what to do.
When I pull this lever, that door will open. Just walk into the chamber.
Please hurry up. Do I walk in now?
Yeah.
It's cold in here.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It doesn't really matter. Goodbye. You've been awfully kind.
Goodbye, honey.
Please close the door.
Marilyn.
Yes?
There's no hatred, no malice in what I have to do.
I know.
Bye now. EDS-34G-11, calling Group 1 on planet Woden. Come in, please. I'm landing in just 10 minutes.
We have to learn in this world of ours. And some of the things that we learn make us feel that we're real tough and real strong, and boy, we can take it. Next time, we've got a story about a kid who was sure he was tough. A real tough guy. Until he ran up against some people who were in the business of learning things. Sometimes you have to find out such things as whether a man's eyeballs fall out when he's decelerated too suddenly. These men are tough. They're just curious.
Join us again next week on both Wednesday and Friday nights when John Campbell returns with more of his fascinating talk and stories while exploring tomorrow. Tonight you heard Mason Adams and Joyce Gordon in our cast. Script was by John Fleming. From a story written by Tom Godwin. Produced and directed by Sanford Marshall here in New York.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.